My guest at this time is Dr. Jerome Corsi. You know him best as the author of books such as Unfit for Command. His latest work is No Greater Valor, The Siege of Bastogne, and The Miracle That Sealed Allied Victory. And Dr. Corsi, thanks so much for being with us.
Great. Good to be with you. Thank you.
Many folks know, of course, that this year marks the 70th anniversary of a number of important events towards the end of World War II. We obviously saw a lot of that around the 70th anniversary of the Normandy invasion and D-Day. But the Battle of the Bulge coming in December and into January, that'll be the 70th anniversary of that as well. And that's a monumental pivot point, really, in the very end stages of World War II. One of the things that you point out very clearly in the book, and hopefully some people are aware of, is that before the Battle of the Bulge, it seemed that the Allies, you know, they had marched their way all the way across France. A lot of people thought the war would be over in Europe by Christmas time, but on December 16th, Hitler changed all that. Just how big of a surprise was this for Allied leaders?
Well, you're exactly right. I mean, when the Battle of the Bulge started, this massive tank attack out of the Bastogne, towards Bastogne in the Ardennes Forest, the U.S. forces ran. They were surprised. They were overwhelmed. And the remarkable thing, in fact, the miracle that soldiers attributed to the Battle of Bastogne, this little tiny village in the Ardennes Forest, Bastogne, which had eight roads crossing through it. It was a critical town to hold because of how, if you wanted to move west from the Ardennes toward the Meuse River, going through Bastogne was the only efficient way to do it. And a small group of U.S. soldiers, spearheaded by the 101st Airborne, which is now, right now, one of our bravest units ever in American military history, today in Liberia fighting Ebola, one regiment of the 10th Armored got to Bastogne before it was encircled. And the miracle, in fact, the men who fought it, and, you know, I knew when I was a kid, my father fought World War II. I dedicated the book to my father, and those that he knew, his friends, some of whom had fought at Bastogne, felt like there were a series of events that were almost like a miracle. God's intervention had permitted them to stay alive, because otherwise the expectation would be they would be overwhelmed by the Germans and Nazis, and it was very unexpected that, in fact, this small group held out long enough, for 8 days, to delay Hitler's advance and actually turn the tide in the Battle of the Bulge.
Talk about what they faced at that point. Just how much ferocity were they facing from the tanks? And at the same time, how were they so caught flat-footed at a time when they obviously, you would think, would be looking out for Germany's last-ditch attempt to save the Reich?
Well, it was about 15,000 Americans total that defended Bastogne, and the Nazis had up to 50 or 60,000 in panzer divisions trying to take Bastogne. At the end of World War II, winter was setting in, and we kind of stalled at the offensive moving into Germany. We felt that Hitler had been pretty well worn down, and the idea that he had all these tank divisions and could put this together was a complete surprise to Allied intelligence. The 101st, which was in rest and recovery, they had lost enormous losses on D-Day and Operation Market Garden. They were called into action. They went into action that night, driven all night long in these open trucks to Bastogne in the cold. They didn't even have winter equipment. They weren't adequately resupplied. They hardly had weapons or ammunition. And from the retreating troops, U.S. troops coming out of the battle, they were brave enough to say, well, the retreating troops had tanks that are up there everywhere. You're all going to get killed. Panzers. That's all we see, panzers. And they said, well, that's why the 101st is being sent in. We're going to handle it. And they said, if you're not using that M1, would you mind handing it to me? Or if you're not using that overcoat, how about giving it to me? So they resupplied themselves bravely on the run, and when they got to Bastogne, they were, like the last troops to arrive, put in the line exactly at the right place with the 10th Armored to just stall the German advance until the defense of Bastogne could be organized.
We're talking with Dr. Jerry Corsi. The book is No Greater Valor. And Dr. Corsi, I just over this past weekend, I had a chance to speak with a veteran of the 101st Airborne who was at Pashtun, and he described exactly what you said in being trucked in the middle of the night in open-air cars out to the front. And at the same time, once they got there, despite bitter temperatures well below zero, they were told they were going to be moving quickly, so you can't have these extra layers. They were essentially out there in their uniforms with no food for days and days and days, to the point where their bodies were so traumatized they didn't even shiver anymore. So talk about the heroism it took to get through the conditions and the ferocity of the Nazis.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, they're getting gangrene feet. They were running out of ammunition. Patton was desperately trying to relieve them. Patton turned the entire Third Army north and was doing a forced march. He was slogging through the snow, blizzards, and fighting determined German resistance. Patton, one of the remarkable things of this battle, Patton called the chaplain into his office and or to his headquarters and said, "I need a prayer for good weather." And the chaplain wrote a prayer. Patton printed it and handed it out to all of the troops in the Third Army. And remarkably, on the 23rd of December, 2 days before Christmas, this was a battle fought for 8 days over Christmas time in 1944, the weather at Bastogne lifted enough that the C-47s could get in and do an airdrop on Bastogne, flying low, very dangerous, being hit by the German anti-aircraft weapons, losing a lot of planes. But that was the exact point at which General McAuliffe, who was commanding the 101st at Bastogne, they were down to one or two shells per artillery gun. And, you know, this is one of the parts that was considered a miracle. The weather changed. Nobody expected it. Meteorologists had not predicted it. They just woke up on the 23rd, and the skies were clear, and they put the C-47s in the air. If they had not resupplied by air Bastogne on December 23rd, I'm confident the Nazis would have overrun the American position at Bastogne. They would have been 101st, the 10th Armored would have been killed or taken prisoner as POWs.
Dr. Corsi, you explain in the book that if the Germans had won, they still would have been in rough shape in the war. But had they won that battle, they obviously would have had that key crossroads you talked about earlier, and they could have dominated the port at Antwerp, which would have made resupplying a real big problem for the Allies. So just how much of a setback would a German victory at the Bulge have been?
Well, Hitler was hoping it would force a negotiated end to the war in Europe where the Nazi regime could stay in power. And it might have, because it would have meant the expenditure of an enormous number of more lives, much more difficult, rugged fighting ahead if Hitler had succeeded. And, you know, the determination of the 101st kept, it's got to be understood. These men really had faith that their cause was right and that the Nazis had to be defeated regardless of what they went through. I mean, General McAuliffe, who was commanding, was the artillery commander, just the right guy, was fighting this as an artillery defense where he zeroed in the lines, the roads on which the German tanks would have to advance. The Germans came in with a flag of a white flag, and McAuliffe was asleep. He got very little sleep in this battle. It was being fought around the clock. They said, "General, the Germans are here under a white flag." Well, McAuliffe actually thought, you know, running out of ammunition, surrounded, he thought the Germans were there to surrender to him. Because as paratroopers, they were used to being surrounded. They were used to being behind enemy lines. And McAuliffe thought as long as he could get ammunition, he would continue to successfully defend Bastogne, and he felt comfortable about that. Well, they said, "No, General, the Germans want you to surrender to them." And he said, "Oh, nuts," you know, disappointed. Well, he sat down after trying to figure out what to say finally in response, and his G3, the operations officer, a guy named Kinnard, said, "Well, General, what you said to begin with wasn't bad." So McAuliffe took the German ultimatum, and he wrote across it, you know, to the German commander from the American commander, "Nuts." And he put an exclamation point on it. And they gave this back to the Germans. The Germans said, "What does this mean?" They said, "Well, that means no, and no in no uncertain terms." He's saying no. Well, that one word, command, electrified U.S. troops all over the world, and the U.S. public at home reading about Bastogne in the newspaper. This really re-energized everybody to determinedly, you know, Patton said, any general that eloquent deserves to be relieved. I'm going to get there. And Patton did. He arrived the day after Christmas. He managed to finally punch through the Germans and get to Bastogne and relieve these besieged 101st and 10th Armor defending Bastogne.
Dr. Corsi, a lot of this book, in addition to detailing what we've already gone through, the facts and figures and leading up to and through and beyond Bastogne, is your investigation of just how much the faith of different people involved in this battle played a role, and how God may have intervened in a number of different ways miraculously. If you go through different wars in history, from George Washington to the Civil War, and obviously even up to the present day and well into history, you certainly have people invoking God's intervention on their behalf. And so as you investigated this, what made that aspect of this battle special compared to divine intervention potentially in other battles throughout history?
Well, this is what really attracted it to me. From the time I was a kid, I first heard the story of how my dad and these other guys were pretty serious guys. I mean, they were tough guys. When they were talking about God intervening, I got a hold of finally found the original after-action oral reports from the battle, the oral histories in the field, and they've been lost for years. And again, they had testimony. S.L.A. Marshall, who wrote the original history, military historian, was there at Bastogne right after the battle. He said it was many of these things were providential, which meant the hand of God was upon them. I mean, just to give you an example, General McAuliffe, when he set out to get to Bastogne, originally thought he was going to Verbermont. That's where the original orders were, a different town in Belgium. But he made a side tour because he thought, well, General Middleton, the corps commander's in Bastogne, I'll see him in person. And when he arrived about 5:30 that night, Middleton said, "General McAuliffe, I'm sure glad to see you because your orders were changed and your unit is coming here." Well, he didn't know that. He just made the right decision instinctively, intuitively, to see the commanding officer in person. Well, they put out the orders of the MP. They made sure that the 101st got to Bastogne and not to Verbermont. McAuliffe realized that the advance party was lost, so McAuliffe, with his command car and his top aides, went out and he picked the assembly area where the 101st would assemble when they arrived in the morning. And Marshall, the historian, said he picked the perfect location from which to deploy the troops and the right order in which for them to arrive, even though he had no advanced knowledge of really the battle situation, where the Germans were attacking. But instinctively, and again, providentially, hand of God, and McAuliffe, till the day he died, attributed God inspiring him as to why he made these types of command decisions to go directly to Bastogne instead of the Verbermont, to pick where he picked to put the assembly area, and on and on and on his decisions went. Which units to put where turned out always to be the exact right units to meet the German attack that day. And for 8 days they held out, freezing, no food. I mean, they were down to taking their lifesavers and their K-rations and melting them with Sterno cans in order to make a little soup. I mean, that's all they had to eat. They were down to nothing. And yet they survived. And all these acts of courage came together in a way that the men felt this was exceptional. This was beyond what they'd expect just from good military planning or good fighting.
Beyond coincidence, certainly as well. And very fascinating to look at, sir, in a nation that's been clearly blessed over its entire history. Perhaps the Battle of the Bulge, December 1944, one of the greatest examples of a blessed nation. Thank you, sir, very much for your time today.
Greg, thank you very much. And people should take a look at the website, nogreatervalor.com. You can read a free chapter of the book on the Battle of Bastogne. And those who buy the book can download free the original maps I found in color, electronically that was sent to you, about 200 pictures from the battle, more than are in the book, and some of the original after-action reports so you can read these testimonies yourself.
plenty of additional material. Again, nogreatervalor.com to get the book as well as those additional resources. Dr. Corsi, congratulations on an obviously extensive research and work to put this. I know it's a labor of love, but very well done, sir. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Greg. I really very much appreciate the time to opportunity to be with you today. Thank you.
You bet. Dr. Jerome Corsi, the book No Greater Valor, The Siege of Bastogne and the Miracle That Sealed Allied Victory. Again, find more at nogreatervalor.com. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.